They are eating the fire out of it. It's been crazy.
I thought you were going to curse just now.
No.
Time for the Angler Within podcast with Roy Bilby.
Let's do another 50, JD. What do you say?
At least.
Yeah.
At least. We're on a good roll.
Yep. And in our quest to educate and help people catch more fish, I want to talk this week about what's going on right now. And it's a little deal we used to call the fall feeding binge. And it's all about the shorter photo period of the day and the falling water temps. And I've been dabbling a little. It's good now. It's not crazy good, but we are headed there fast.
So I called you, I think it was Thursday. Must have been Thursday. I called you from Bass Pro. Of course, you didn't answer.
Right.
Because I was staring at umbrella rigs. And I know that we're getting close to the time for the umbrella rig.
I'll talk about that.
I'm assuming that your answer would have been get it.
Oh, it would have. 100%.
What's the one I should get?
Okay. There's a lot of them out there. My favorite by far is the one made by Yum. It's called the Yumbrella Flash Mob Junior. I think they're around $15. You can run 5 jigs off it, which is legal in New York. In New York, we're allowed is up to 15 hooks on a single line. And the reason for that is...
At any point of time during the year?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And the reason for that is St. Lawrence River, musky fishing, giant pike. Some of those musky lures are like 14, 15, 16 inches long. They got 5 treble hooks. That's 15 hooks. That's the limit. But that applies to everything. So I wouldn't want to throw an umbrella rig that had like 10 or 12 jigs on it for fear of tangling. But I know they make them that big. But I would never throw one. I do fine with the Yumbrella Flash Mob Junior. It's got wires that you can put on 5 different jigs. And I've been doing something different this year. Typically, I'll run it with 1/4 ounce heads and I'll put a Zoom Super Fluke Junior on it. And that's when I'm fishing like the Mohawk River, the Hudson River, the big rivers. And I've done that in this Schoharie Creek and smallmouth when the bait fish are grouping up. That's when this rig really comes into its own. And I know guys that fish it at all times of the year. I typically don't do that. And as we ease into November, because that's when the bait fish are grouping and they're herding them in the shallows. I use it on flats and I often catch doubles on it. So far this season, I've only been catching singles, but I'm doing something a little bit different with it this year because when I'm fishing the Schoharie Creek, the bait fish tend to run a little bit smaller than they do in the Mohawk and the larger river systems. So what I did this year, I wanted to experiment. I've been using 1/8 ounce jig heads and running my little 2-inch Bass Pro Shops squirming shads on it. And they are eating the fire out of it. It's been crazy.
I thought you were going to curse just now.
No.
Eating the fire out of it.
Yeah, you know me. I don't have a need to do that.
I was.
But you felt it coming.
I was finishing the sentence for you before you got there, but it isn't what you did.
Well, I've never been so happy to disappoint you. How's that?
I'm like, is he gonna drop an F-bomb? Do I have work to do on the editing side?
Nope. I don't use F-bombs.
It's all good.
I don't need to do that.
I've never heard you do it once. I never even heard you do it once.
That's not how I express myself. My dad set such a great example for me. He never used profanity. He never swore, and that made such an impression on me because I wanted to be like my dad and still do.
Well, I'll tell you what, my dad loved that word, and that's why I use it all the time. It can fit into any part of a sentence.
Well, we balance each other out.
That's good. So I'm going to have to grab a umbrella, and I already have a handful of squirming shads, but I'm going to get some more of them.
Well, here's the thing I like about the Flash Mob Junior. It's got those five wire arms. The center one I leave straight back, and the others I go to 10 o'clock, 2 o'clock, 4 o'clock, and 8 o'clock. And I spread them out so that they don't tangle with each other. But the Flash Mob Junior has little willow leaf blades ahead in the middle of the shaft of every wire shaft, ahead of your jig. So you not only get the little kick of the boot tail or the paddle tail or whatever swim bait you're running, but you get the flash of that blade, and it looks like it simulates, you know, a school of bait fish, two different sizes with 10 of them in there, and it fires them up. It does. So I'll tell you what I've been doing. And the first thing I want to put out there, though, is you've explained to me, and I get talking about it a lot, those 50 fish days we have in the fall, the 60, sometimes the 80 fish days. But you've explained to me that in a lot of cases, that doesn't make me very relatable. And I get that.
Sometimes.
Have to remember. Yeah. Well, I get that. But people need to remember that for 40 years, I've been studying this and writing it down in tremendous detail to learn as much as I can and get better at this craft. But I studied it like my life depended on it, and it doesn't, but that's how I approached it.
Sure.
And I know how to generate those numbers at certain times of the year in certain situations with certain baits, because it's something, if you follow the life cycle of the fish, This fall feeding binge, it happens every year. It's triggered by the falling water temperatures and the diminishing daylight. It's nature's way of telling these fish, winter's coming, you better stock up. And they do. And right, I mean, it hung and waited for such a long time that the dreaded dog days of summer, we finally got out of those, and the water temps came down to about 60 degrees. They fell through the 60s, but right at 60 degrees, they hung for like 3 weeks. And I'm like, when is the water temp going to drop? Because we kept having these warm days, cool nights, but it would warm right back up during the day. And the water temp in the moving water, which is rivers, streams, creeks, it just stayed right at 60 degrees forever. But it finally broke about a week and a half, 2 weeks ago. And what I did, and before I get into explaining my last 3-4 trips, which is when it really got below 60 degrees, I want to put out, you asked me how we did in our club championship, and I told you, and you said, are you going to talk about that in the podcast?
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, nah, not sure. And you said, I think you should, because it will make you more relatable.
Yes,
because that happens to everybody, and I agree 100%. So we're going for full transparency.
I'm
here.
So proud of you.
We sucked in the final championship.
I'm sorry that happened, but I'm loving hearing this.
Yeah. Well, we are tragically human, okay? And
now,
apparently
now,
intent on proving it.
Just so Mark hears this and he knows, I'm not saying that I love hearing it because you lost. I just love hearing Roy talk about that there's some chinks in that armor.
Yeah.
It's all right.
We struggled mightily. And again, so everybody knows, in our club, the top 10 teams in the point standings for the entire season, that's who gets invited to this championship. You have to place in the top 10 in the points. We finished eighth overall in the points, and we had a couple bad tournaments, but we held our ground because they were bad for a lot of the field. And we actually set a club record with three teams zeroing in the one event where Mark and I put two fish in the boat, and two fish never did so much. Usually you drop like a missile if you only bring in two, and we held pace. It didn't hurt us, didn't help us at all, but it did not hurt us. So we get to this championship, and it's a pool that we have fished once or twice. But we launched at a new launch at the very top of the pool, and we'd never run the whole pool. We caught fish down in the bottom end of it where we launched previously. So we were seeing some new water, but he had Google Earthed it, and I had looked at it, and we had picked a starting point based on feeder creeks and stuff, and we went right to that, and we just couldn't get bit. So we ran downriver to the areas of the pool that we were familiar with, where we had caught fish, and we're in almost first half hour into this tournament, and guys are going right to the lock because the locks are opening, and we haven't made any contact. I said, hey, we need to lock down to the next pool. I know that's against everything I've always said, and I've locked down and up numerous times, and it's always burned me, but we have spots in that pool. We caught a bunch of fish the tournament we fished in that pool this year. And he said, I agree. So we locked down with a bunch of other teams. We went to all the sweet spots we have in that hole, and we never got a fish in the boat. We had a couple contacts, a couple light strikes. We never got a hook in anything. We never hooked up and lost a fish. We never hooked a fish. And we were trying the best stuff we had. 4 hours into the day, I said, we spent half our day here. We got nothing to show for it. We need to go back up and just drop the trolling motor and grind in that upper pool.
Can I ask you this?
Yeah.
Did you consider, or did you throw a weightless, naked, wacky rig Senko?
No.
That's what I would have done.
Well, we tried a Ned rig.
But you didn't do the wacky Senko naked. I mean, who knows? Sometimes, and better yet, you know what you could have used? 3,500 spinning reel and the 7-foot rod. Boom. Got it. That could have won you the whole thing.
Hindsight's 20/20.
I don't
JD.
Know. Who knows? I doubt it would have worked. But the net wasn't working either, huh?
We tried all the juice that's always worked in that hole. I was throwing the best lures for me at this time of the year, and we couldn't buy a fish. So we locked back up and we went to work in that pool. Same scenario. We're just not catching fish, and we tried everything. And I don't typically fish like this. We were hitting a spot 10 minutes. We were running and gunning, and that trying to cover water and hit high percentage areas. That's not my style. That is not my style. When it's tough, I put the trolling motor down and I cover water and grind. And so we went into that mode, and maybe an hour left in the tournament, I feel a little resistance. So I pull and, you got one? And I'm like, no, I think I got a stick. I got a little bit of weight. I've got no life at all. And I pull in a 4-inch goby on a 4-inch Berkeley power tube. And I go, well, I'm not skunked. He goes, you're going to count that? I said, I caught it. I caught a fish. I didn't get skunked, but I got half a mind to put this into live well, so we got something to weigh in, you know? And we fished the remaining hour right to the last minute. Never caught a fish. To our surprise, I walked down to where they're weighing the fish in after we pulled the boat out and started strapping it down. I just walked down to where they're weighing fish, and I said, you can put a goose egg for us. We got nothing. And I look at the board, and there's other goose eggs up there. I went back and I told Mark, I want to stay for the weigh-in so we can shake the winner's hand because they earned it, but we're not the only ones who zeroed. Turns out there were 4 teams out of 10. 40% of the field weighed in no fish. One team only had 2. The other 5 teams all weighed in limits. So my hat's off to them. But you're talking the top 10 teams on our circuit, the top 10 performing teams for the entire season, and 40% of that field didn't put a fish on the scales. That made us feel better that it wasn't just us who failed miserably, you know, but my goodness, the guys who won now, and there's been a lot of controversy over this. They're young guys. They've got the full live scope. That's what they do. I've had other club members tell me about watching them pull up to a spot. They just stare at the screen. They don't make a cast until they see a fish, throw to it, catch it, put it in the box, go right back to looking at the screen. Now, I have live scope. We couldn't even, typically we can find fish all over the place with it, but I'm not good at catching them with it. I excel at 2D sonar. I can see a fish, drop a drop shot on his head, and pull him out first lift, time after time after time. And I've gotten very confident with it, but this live scope, it's still new to me. It shows me more fish than I ever believed would have ever been there. And I see fish after fish come and look at my bait and swim away. I have yet to see one on live scope eat my bait. It's going to happen. I need to go out with somebody who knows this technology and go, look, I'm 66 years old. Okay. I know I'm a dinosaur. Tell me what I'm not doing with this. Tell me what I'm doing wrong. I'm missing something, and it's not my preferred way to fish, but I'm getting my teeth kicked in with guys that are using it. They won every tournament they fished this year, except for one, and they won the championship. Nobody in our club has ever dominated that way.
But you're saying, but you're saying that they are likely most comfortable by comparison to the entire field of view that are out there with their forward-facing sonar.
And other guys have the same technology.
But are they as good with it?
Apparently not, because these two guys are kicking everybody's teeth
and
in.
How old are these two guys?
To look at them, I'd say maybe 30.
Okay. So hold on.
Okay.
You have them beat with skill alone. Okay. So right now they have an edge on you. They don't have 40 years of journaling behind them, Roy.
They don't years behind them.
You've got that. They don't have 40 years, period. So here's what you do. Get your butt on YouTube. Find some little known hacks with this thing and just start. And this is not a shot at you at all, but I'm going to guess that sometimes when you turn on that forward facing sonar, you are probably afraid to push certain buttons within it. Otherwise, you might land yourself on a page you can't get out of.
Bingo.
Okay.
I can cycle through the menu and the different screens and stuff like that to select the options I want. But when I do the live scope, I just hit live scope and let it run.
Yeah, no, you're not doing it
and
right.
And I know I can adjust it and get more out
you
of
paid,
it.
You paid too much money that to push one button and have one function that just does one thing for you. Okay.
Agreed.
So I would say get on YouTube and watch, get the version, you know, type in the model that you have.
Yeah.
And watch it. And then also, next time you're over at Bass Pro, talk to the experts in the shop to show you parts of your technology that you're not up to snuff on.
You gave me some homework.
You just have to get, it's just like working a phone, man. You know, I mean, I know that you're not the most comfortable on the iPhone either. You can do what you do on it. But if I were to ask you to send me a photo while you were talking to me on the phone, your head would explode.
No, I can do that now. I learned
but before
how to
you
keep
couldn't,
my phone on.
But
yeah, before I tried to do it, I turned my phone off.
Right.
What happened?
So it's okay. I think that it's a simple challenge of better learning your technology, and then next year you go out there and you kick their teeth in instead.
The generation gap is killing me, but like you said, I spent way too much money on the technology to push one button.
Yeah, what are you
just
doing?
Just have it show me all the fish I'm not
and
catching.
And it was probably the one thing that like it did on its own little get to know me orientation screen that popped in, and then you're like, nope, good enough. And then off you went.
So anyway, that's my story. And I'll tell you what, all due respect, I respect what those guys accomplished this year, and my hat's off to them. There's other guys in the club who are not thrilled about it, but hey, that technology is available.
It's legal.
And,
I mean,
and I find it incredibly interesting that the same controversy that went on in all the major circuits, it's happening in our little club. That fascinates me.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's all the old guys who are like, that should be outlawed. And it's the new guys who are like, this is awesome.
Yeah.
Because you're winning everything. But yeah, it's I got homework to do and more on this as it develops. And I'm glad you told me to share that because, yeah, I am human. I do get skunked. This year, I went back to my journal. In the first 22 trips I took this year, I got skunked 5 times. I can't remember the last year I got skunked 5 times. It usually happens once, possibly twice a year, but I've had a 3-year stretch where I didn't get skunked at all. So that's what I strive for. But 5 times in the first 22 trips, and again, full disclosure, that time of year, I mean January to April, especially in March, pushing the limits, fishing the most negative conditions you can imagine just to see if I can catch fish in it.
Right.
And most people don't do that. So I know I'm putting myself at risk of getting skunked. And why does that matter to me? Because I'm a goal setter. I always set goals. And the best way to improve is to continue to raise your goals and raise the bar on yourself. And my most successful consecutive string was 230 trips that spanned just shy of 3 years not getting skunked. So I'm always on a mission. And this I credit this to Rick Klun, who famously said on the weigh-in stage when he won his third classic, there are no limits. So if I accomplished it once, I'm going to see if I can top that. And I've been on a quest to top 230 ever since. And I did that probably 15, 20 years ago now. And I always get right around 100. And that because I push the envelope so much to such extremes, I end up getting skunked and shooting myself in the foot. But I've always said it doesn't mean anything if you don't challenge yourself and if you don't earn it. And I'm always going to do that. And I'm always going to put myself at risk, but hopefully I can top that 230 someday. And if I don't, I can always hang my hat in that and say, not bad, pretty good.
Yeah.
So here's what's been going on. And again, I said, this has a lot to do with water temp. It finally, and these four trips I'm going to talk about occurred within the past 2 weeks when the water temp finally got below 60. And these are all trips to streams and creeks for smallmouth. The first day, the water temp was 56 degrees. I'm like, oh, that's going to change things. And I was out that day. It was a solo trip. I got into a section that is hard to get to, but we had had some rain and the water level had come up enough that I could actually, because I'm in a 14-foot jumbo. I'm not in a kayak. I'm not in waders. So there's some areas that are really hard to get to, but I could get to this area.
How often do you get out of your jumbo and drag it across the rocks?
I had to do that this last trip with my son, but I took waders anticipating I would have to do that.
Okay.
And it takes a half hour to get up through this area where there's all these boulders and rocks where when the water level drops, you run into them and you can't get through them. This first day, the water level was high enough. I fished 7 hours. I was by myself and I boated 43 smallmouth and I went, okay, pretty good. But when the water temp drops, it's going to get better. And then maybe 4 days later, I was out a different area. The water temperature had dropped to 54 degrees. We'd had a couple nights in the 30s and only hit the 50s, mid-50s during the day. So the water temp had dropped 2 degrees. I was out for 7.5 hours. There were two fishermen. I took a friend with me. And between us, we boated 47. So it was a little bit better, but we fished 30 minutes longer. But then we got a little bit of a warm stretch. And the following week I was out, the water temp had come up 2 degrees, back up to 56 degrees. And we were out for 9 hours. I was out with my buddy John Apino from New Jersey, and we had all we could do to land 33. Now that's a good number, 33 smallmouth, one trip, that's pretty good. But it was on the same stretch that we'd caught 47 in an hour and a half less the week before when the water was 2 degrees colder.
Can I interrupt?
Sure.
This is John Apino, the listener.
Yes, he is. He has listened to every single episode.
You met him through this, right? You met him through Instagram.
I met him, right? I was doing an appearance at Bridgeport, Connecticut. He knew I was going to be there, drove 2 hours
How has this guy been on a boat with you more than I have?
He's been out with me twice.
How many times?
You've been out with me more than twice.
On your boat?
Yeah.
I think I've been on your boat twice. So we're tied.
All right.
I have to get the next one. This guy, John, I love you.
Yeah.
John, I love you. It's nothing against you. I'm calling out Roy here. I'm glad that you've gotten these experiences with him. I'm a little jealous, and I got a little FOMO going on there. You know what FOMO is?
No.
Fear of missing out. I'm missing out. I'm going.
I will.
So I know you've tried. You have reached out and been like, what are you doing this day? I want to get out with you. And I'm like, I can't because my schedule, in case everyone hasn't noticed, my schedule sucks. Anyway.
So, yes, I will get you out in the boat. What I want to do is get you out and show you one of these epic smallmouth days. And the timing couldn't be better. So if we can get a day when we're both available, I will get you out in the boat and show you smallmouth fishing like you've never seen before.
I'll even fish with John Appino in the boat. I'm happy to go with him in the boat, too. He's allowed to go.
He had a week off. That's why. That's why he was able to do that.
Both times that you and I have gone out on your boat, we've been on Goodyear. So, And he got to go on Schoharie, which is where I'm dying to get in the smallmouth with you. And I've driven alongside that body of water, and I'm like, I got to get out there with Roy on this creek. I got to get out there.
We will make it happen.
Before the snow flies.
Oh, hopefully to talk about on the next podcast. All right.
Wouldn't that be something?
Yeah. Hopefully we get Ray in on that. Hint, hint.
We should get him out there as well. Yes, absolutely. Ray, you're going with me. John, you're out. John, you're out. Ray, you're in.
So I did. My son was out from New Hampshire. This is the fourth trip I'm going to talk about. Just to let you know what's going on. The water temp, he came out for a couple of days. He always does that, like the third week in October, to check all his deer stands. We fish a couple places. We have a venison dinner. He visits with people he's really tight with out here. Then he goes back, and then he's all set. When he comes for deer season, everything's good to go. So we went to the creek for 7 hours. It rained the entire time, except for the final hour. We basically just got everything dried out. And then as we were loading up, the 8 minutes it took to load up, we got the heaviest cloud burst of the day. And after being dried out for an hour, we rode home in that truck soaked to the gills. We got a downpour. We got hail. It was miserable, but we had a great trip. The water temp was the coldest I've recorded yet this fall. It was 52 degrees. I took him back to that area where it's hard to get to, and the water level had dropped. So I had waders in case I needed them. Smart move. I did need them. It took me 30 minutes to navigate the boat up through while he walked the bank to keep extra weight out of the boat.
So the boat was floating.
For the most part, I drag it over a few rocks. It got stuck numerous times. The water had only dropped maybe 6 or 8 inches, but before I was floating over those rocks, and now they were sticking up, and I was banging into them. That 14-foot, John, drafts very shallow.
What's the one you always have over at camp with us? That's the 14, right?
That's the 14.
Yeah.
But we put diamond plate in the four to reinforce it because I've had it 20 years and have fished it in rocky places, and it's battle-worn. I can wear out a boat.
I thought it was in better shape than that. Is it dinged up on the bottom, really?
Yeah, it's really dinged up. You can't see the bottom, but it's all dinged up, and that's why I put the aluminum diamond plate in it to reinforce it. Now it's solid, but it's heavier. So
did you weld it on there?
I don't care. We riveted it.
Can water come in through the bottom and then go underneath and into the boat?
Nope.
Because you riveted it.
We used high-tech water sealant. We used special aluminum rivets. We used aluminum diamond plate. I had a boat. It had a few. I stand all the time. So there's a lot of stress on the rivets. So
I don't think I ever noticed the rivets in the bottom of that boat.
There was cracks on the seams going across where it's riveted, and they cracked right at the rivets because that's where the stress is, because I stand up all the time. This boat had like three places where there was very slow seeps. So in order to fix that, we drilled 20 holes in the bottom of the boat and then riveted this diamond plate in, and it has not leaked since.
Knock on wood.
So knock on aluminum. So, or aluminium.
Aluminium.
That was for my son, because that came up while we were fishing on this day when the water temp had dropped to 52 degrees. And I said, we're going to get him pretty good. And we went to that upper section. It's a unique feature there that holds fish until the deepest water is only 8-9 foot. So once the water temps drop into the low 40s, they're headed to the wintering holes and they leave that area. But they're in it right now. And we caught a bunch there, but we wore it out. So we went back down below to another hole. And again, with the waders and walking it down through, but we got in the other hole to finish our day. And we ended the day with 56 smallmouth. And my son outfished me. So my hat's off to him. But between us, we boated 56 smallmouth and the water temp was 52 degrees. Now, as good as that sounds, and that's a fine day, 7 hours, 56 smallmouth. I get all kinds of comments on Instagram. Dude, you guys slammed them. And by all accounts, we did. But the magic number for me has always been 48 degrees. That's when you can have those 60 and 70 fish days on the moving water. And on Goodyear, which is basically a dammed up river. There's current. It's a lake, but it's moving water too. We've had 80 plus days. That's in November, like mid-November, the final weekend before deer season. And I will be doing that with my doctor. He and I do that trip every year. He's been going through some stuff health-wise and supposed to be clear for that day, and he really needs it. He's not been on the water for a while, and I just hope we go out and have the best day we've ever had. But 48 degrees, and by then it should be about 42, but 48 degrees is when I've seen the floodgates open and basically can do no wrong. Yes, their metabolism is slowing down, but they're being told winter's coming, you need to stock up, and they'll have huge swollen bellies and still be chewing down, you know, 4 and 5 inch grubs and tubes and Ned rigs and all kinds of stuff. At that point, once it's into the 40s, that's when I stop throwing moving baits. I may try the umbrella rig, but if it's not working, I'm strictly jigs, like a grub or a tube or Ned rig, because that's what I'm catching them on. That's what works for me. My son, when the water was 56 or 52, when it was 52 degrees, he caught fish on a spinnerbait, and I was catching them on the A rig. Not like I did the previous day, but I caught a few on it, and I believe he caught one on his as well. But he was doing well with a spinnerbait, and he had a Yamamoto bait that I did not have, and they were showing a preference for it. Now, the last time I was there, they showed a preference for a tube, Strike King Bitsy tube in green pumpkin, and that outfished everything I threw. But you know me, I carry 5 rods, all different baits, and both days I caught fish on every single rod. So they're eating a variety of baits. But when the water gets down into that 40 degree range, they tend to feed mostly on the bottom. They stop chasing. And if you get aggressive strikes, that tells you there's a lot of fish in the area. But sometimes you've got to dead stick it, and they'll smack it hard. That's what's coming. And they'll bite really good from 48 degrees down to 42, 40 degrees. After that, you can still have stellar days, but they come and go because their metabolism is slowed down so much. They do not need to feed as frequently, and they'll go for 2-3 days without eating because their metabolism, they metabolize what they eat much slower at that water temperature because they're cold-blooded. So their body temperature is 38 degrees. So they just don't need to eat as often. And they've been feeding for weeks in preparation for winter. So that's what's coming, everybody. Use a water temperature gauge. Use a $2 thermometer on a shoestring with a sinker. I don't care. Use something, a pool thermometer, aquarium thermometer, something that will tell you what that water temperature is and monitor it. It's going to be in the low 50s now, maybe even the low 40s, and the bite is going to heat up as the water cools down. And again, more on this as it develops.
And you can get some more on this and other things if you check out Roy's Instagram at all lowercase Roy Bilby.
And I am posting a lot of pictures of the smallmouth we're catching right now and getting a lot of comments. So thanks to everybody for following. Up around 3,400 plus followers now. That just amazes me. I'm glad you're enjoying it. And I enjoy seeing what you post too. I follow a lot of people. It's all about helping people catch more fish. Because on the Instagram, I will tell you exactly what I'm throwing and what the fish are eating to help you tap into your Angler Within.